Hello and welcome to a special episode of Mission Critical, a podcast where we explore the real stories behind modern entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Lance Chung, and today I am so thrilled to be joined by Andrea Grand, founder of Barbette, a Canadian-founded company that is changing culture and opening the dialogue around what a modern beverage brand looks and tastes like. This episode is made possible by MasterCard, who, as we do, believe that when small business wins, everyone wins. They recognize that small businesses aren't just economic engines, they're cultural drivers, community builders, and sources of meaningful connection. That's why MasterCard supports small business owners at every stage of their journey by understanding their unique needs and building tailored solutions to help them grow and stay protected in today's digital economy. Whether it's supporting brands like Barbette or launching a product from your living room, today's entrepreneurs are creating businesses that reflect who they are and what their communities need. MasterCard is proud to be a part of that story. So with that, let's dive into Andrea's journey. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Hi, Andrea. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm so glad that we are able to chat. I feel like the first time since you started your entrepreneurial journey, it started off with just like a DM, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, do you want to try out this like new thing that I've started and everything? And then look at where you are today. I see you at the grocery store. Like, I see your product at the grocery store. I see it everywhere. And it's like also like such a vibey brand. I love it.
Thank you.
It's amazing to see how much you've built it.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I actually think the first time we ever interacted was in my two careers ago at Air Miles. And you came in and did a program with us.
Oh, right.
And that was the first time we ever chatted. And then as soon as I was launching this, you're at the middle of kind of like cultural center of Toronto. I was like, he needs to try this.
And I also feel like timing-wise, it was such a great time for you to launch a product and a brand like yours because the conversation around how we consume beverages and everything has changed a lot.
Yeah.
And the culture and also the audience in terms of like younger people, how they consume different types of beverages as well as like alcohol. It's like, it's just that whole discourse has really changed a lot.
Absolutely.
In the span of just like 5 years even. So,
Yeah. I mean, like when we started formulating and we'll get into the story of it all, but we came out in 2021, December. We were just going into another lockdown and the conversation completely had changed. And it wasn't just about alcohol, but it was about health and it was about wellness and it was about finding these third spaces because our first and our second spaces had become our home. Mm. We were working and we were living in all of the same context. And so I think people were just looking for something new.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's rewind. if we can start off, if you can introduce yourself and also, you know, what is your elevator pitch as the founder of your company to the world?
Yeah, so I'm Andrea Grand. I'm the co-founder of Barbette. I started this with my sister, and she was the catalyst to this entire creation. So she has epilepsy, and she had a pretty bad seizure. March of 2020, obviously a lot of things were happening in March of 2020 as well. But through that experience, she cut out drinking for a short period of time. She cut out a bunch of other things from her diet. But the drinking of alcohol component was really what spurred us to create this. So she was at social events or she was having solo moments that she wasn't necessarily feeling were elevated because she was constantly kind of holding a pop or a soda that you'd have at the kids' table. So something juvenile in branding and in flavor profile. And then on top of that, she got the question, why aren't you drinking? Mm-hmm. So just constantly felt like an outsider looking in. So we started looking for something for her and we couldn't find anything. This was, again, back in 2020, the rise of modern soda hadn't happened. Like the functional beverages space was still not as obviously robust as it is now. Non-alcoholic drinks were not anywhere close to what they are now. Now we have whole concept bottle shops dedicated to the space.
Yes.
And so we couldn't find anything. And so we've super naively one day said, how hard could this be? It was very hard, Cole's notes. but how hard this could this be? And kind of put one foot in front of another and eventually kind of formulated what is now Barbette.
And what's the story behind the name?
So no sexy PR answer. Like I wish I had like a great grandfather that was like a sparkling water sommelier, but we worked with an incredible team here in Toronto on our branding and we had a list of 20 names. My sister Katie and I said we're not going to talk about it. We both came back Monday morning and we said, Barbette, we just love the juxtaposition of the word bar in a drink that isn't in the alcohol space. And it just sounded like the right amount of quirky that we were looking for to kind of like disrupt the space that we were entering.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
It's so interesting just thinking back on like the kind of inception of the brand and the reason why, but also how much the world has changed since then. And now we see headlines around functional beverages selling for like being valued for like $1 billion. And obviously those headlines are not the norm.
Yeah.
But I think it just goes to show that this is a category that has really started to like diversify and cultivate and be cultivated. And there's a lot more options for people out there now where, and it's also not a binary in that like you don't have to be someone that's like completely sober. You don't have to be someone that is like, you know, like you can have a non-alcoholic beverage in between your alcoholic beverages. Like,
absolutely.
You don't have to shoot, you know?
Well, and that's like, that's our entire premise. Like obviously Katie and her experience is our North Star, and we drove so many decisions from that feeling she had of being discluded from a moment. And our entire intention was to create a beverage that was putting alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks on a level playing field. We're not a sobriety brand. We're not an alcohol-free brand. We are, you deserve equally delicious beverage, independent of if you are putting alcohol or not in it. So what we set out to create was this like full-flavored beverage that played on the senses just in the same way as you do when you're eating food. So we have strong flavor profiles. We have really strong aromatics. All of our beverages pour out into a color, so you're not just getting like another clear liquid at the end of the day or midday. So it feels elevated. It feels special. And we wanted to capture that. And then we also were really heavy, obviously, on the values of it all. So all of our cans give back to a charity organization, a grassroots charity organization. And then the packaging, we wanted to elicit the question, what are you drinking? Not why aren't you drinking? And really try and like get people away from what is missing in a can or cup and focus on what is in that can or cup. And so for us, like the versatility was built into this product. We wanted to be like the one can stop that you had in your fridge. You grab it, if you're drinking that evening, if you're drinking alcohol that evening, you can mix it. You can mix it with a non-alc spirit. You can drink it straight up. You can drink it straight out of like a funky little glassware or straight from a can. And it kind of fits all of these moments while still like holding this moment of inclusion.
Yeah. Speaking of inclusion, so how have you seen the conversation from your peers or even like your customers or even like the other brands that you work with? And collaborate with, how have you seen the conversations changing and evolving over the years since you started, like since day one to now, around this kind of category and around these rituals and things like that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's drastically changed. I think we all can even go back to our own university days and the experience that drinking alcohol was then. And I think even for university students now, that conversation is shifting. We see the next generation not drinking alcohol as much as they were previous generations, and they are looking for alternative sources to relax or rejuvenate or whatever it might be. So I think they say in entrepreneurship, like, you can't buy timing. And when we came out with this product, the cultural shift was happening. And I think we came out at this perfect time to kind of lead the conversation, especially locally here in Toronto, around alcohol doesn't have to be at the center point of your experience. So we did a lot of work in the beginning in events and experiences and like really putting Barbette at the center point of those experiences and removing like the domination of kind of like the alcohol industry within it.
Yeah.
All of that to be said, again, as I said, like we don't shy away from mixing Barbette with alcohol. Like we developed this to be versatile. So all of our events, for example, we always mandate that you have to have equal alcohol to non-alcoholic drink menu options so that, again, you can choose whichever path you want to go. And you mentioned just like the fact that people are mixing it in. So I think it's like 93-94% of people who are ordering a non-alc drink are also ordering alcohol. So it's not
literally
that...
Literally me last night.
Yes, exactly. We're just learning.
Yeah.
But like you're not, it's not one or the other. It's it's really like this overlap and like these circles that are over each other that is making this stand out, I feel.
What would you say was the toughest kind of conversation or toughest like mental hurdle that you had to get people to overcome in order to understand Barbette in the way that you wanted people to understand it?
I mean, I think it's still somewhat what we experience today in that, like, everyone, it's human nature, but we all want to categorize and put something in a box and say that it exists within that box. And we're trying to, like, kind of break that mold. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a sparkling beverage. People have been drinking that for generations. Like, who are we to tell you how to drink it? Like, we are just trying to show you all of the different versatile ways that you can consume it. So I think that for us, it's just about that, like, what does non-alcoholic mean? What does modern soda mean? Like, what does sparkling beverage mean? And, like, trying to figure out how we can thread that meaning and bring that forward to relate to, like, what we want Barbette to stand for.
Because do you think that all of those words and terms are interchangeable, or are they, you know, are there different kind of instances where one is more appropriate or applicable? Is it contextual in how you use it? Like, what's your preference?
Yeah, I mean, I hate the word mocktail. I'll put that out there because I feel as though it, like, insinuates that it's lacking something, and that's
pretending
just
to be something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you're mocking something, you're pretending to be something, and that's not what the category is about. But I do think the other things are interchangeable. I think that there's maybe a struggle ordering a non-alc something at a consumption moment. Like, for me, it's more about the consumption moment. So, like, for Barbette, we sit at a, we can have it with a salad or a sandwich. We can have it if you're order, like, if you're at a wine bar and you don't want to drink that evening, like, you can have it there. So for us, it's versatility and consumption moments. We're less about, like, the labels, I think, put on top of it. That being said, you go into grocery, you go into all of these experiences and spaces where, like, there are traditional categories you have to fit into. And so we just kind of, like, mold to all of those three. So non-alc, sparkling, and modern soda.
Is there also a difference between, if someone was telling me this, zero proof, non-alc, and then, like, something else in terms of how they're all, like, there's some sort of nuance that's, like, makes one different from the other,
right? Yes, there is. So it's about alcohol percentage. So a lot of things that we consume have alcohol in it. So ethanol, usually. And so up to, for non-alc, it's up to 0.5%. And then zero proof is 0.0%.
I see. Interesting.
But again, like, we're, it, the category is so new, you'll see it on menus, non-alc, not zero proof, like, modern soda, all kind of interchangeably being used.
And the beautiful thing that I've noticed is that the options on a menu are so much more diverse and interesting at restaurants and bars than they used to be for people that don't want to drink all night or don't drink, period. And so you have options that are not just, like, a Coke or a Pepsi, or, like, you know, just, like, the kid, what the kids might have.
Well, exactly. And, like, the you don't want what you had when you were sitting at the kids' table. Like, you want something elevated. You want something special. And I equate this. So I was a vegetarian and didn't, like, eat any meat for a really long time. And I would go to a restaurant and you'd order the salad, but you'd say, hold the chicken, hold the shrimp, whatever it is. Because there wasn't a menu dedicated to vegetarians. Fast forward, there's now entire concepts, restaurant concepts dedicated to plant-based eating. And so I think, like, I equate that to this. Like, when we started and when we launched, there was few and far between restaurants with a dedicated menu that was, like, specially designed for people who didn't want to consume alcohol that evening. And now it's, again, like, it's, like, full menu pages inserts into menus. So, like, the cultural shift has happened, and you're seeing it in real time.
I almost feel like now it's almost like a knock against an establishment if they don't have those options from, like, an inclusivity standpoint, an accessibility standpoint. So if you see a restaurant that doesn't even have any of those options, then, or it's, like, water and like, a pop. You know, it's almost like a knock against the establishment because they haven't actually considered the needs of their potential clientele and the people coming through the door.
Absolutely.
I see that. It's so interesting to see how, I mean, maybe it hasn't seemed quick on your end, but on my end, I feel like it's happened so quickly where the section on a menu has changed a lot. And now I feel like every single bar or restaurant that I go to, and this is speaking from someone who lives obviously in, like, a very dense urban you know, landscape. But from my experience, it's, like, it is on every single menu, whether it's a big establishment or even just like a small little like snack bar
yeah.
in the neighborhood, which yeah. is so great to see.
Yeah.
you know, there's a lot of pressure sometimes to build quickly, follow mm-hmm. the very traditional path, especially when we think about what the culture around entrepreneurship was like before, when there's like big splashy headlines about yeah. people raising millions and millions of dollars and
yeah.
a lot of like overnight success stories.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the definition of success has changed for founders that are driven by purpose? And how do you feel like the culture around entrepreneurship and small business ownership has changed?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting question because I think there's so many ways I can answer this. Like one, we can talk about the finances of it and like the raising of the money and the
yeah.
the millions of dollars raised equating to millions of dollars in revenue and the quick exits where you're raising a bunch of capital mm-hmm. and you have a path forward to like a quick exit plan. And that's one way to build a business. And I think profit was, and revenue, I should say, actually more importantly, was the multiple that people were getting valuated on. Now, stability and EBITDA and the mm-hmm. long-term profitability of a business is much more looked at than those like quick flash in the pans of like a trendy product, a trendy brand, building millions in sales super, super quickly, and then exiting based off of that. Like now there's just like a more diligent approach, I think, when it comes to looking at those key metrics, so your EBITDA, your revenue, your cost of acquisition. So like all of those key things are now holding much more importance than they did previously. And that's mm-hmm. like in that post 2020 world.
Yeah.
And then I think like in terms of the, like the diligence around how to build and how the founder now plays into it, like we're seeing entrepreneurs and founders becoming the faces of brands where that hasn't really necessarily happened prior.
Yeah.
Now, I might also be biased because like this is my first entrepreneurial journey. This is my first time in the beverage space. So I think I'm exposed to it a whole lot more than I probably was having worked a corporate job.
Yeah.
But it does feel like you've got Midday Squares and J. Carl. Like you've got like all of these huge
yes. Yes.
CPG companies that have put their founders forward. And I think it lends itself to the bigger trend, which is this idea of building out loud. So posting about your journey, like talking about the realities of entrepreneurship and how you're building the business. Like we see LinkedIn as like a soaring platform of which founders are using to tell their story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that it's all great. I think it's just a different way of building a business and great gaining awareness and promoting yourself really at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. What made you take that leap from the corporate world into the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah.
It's like very different. And I'm sure you were able to take a lot of stuff from that previous
yes.
experience into it. But a little scary, I imagine, but exciting at the same time. Like what,
yeah.
what stirred that?
I mean, I think it was one of those traditional paths where I was working a corporate job, doing this kind of on the side. Katie and I were like loosely talking about it. Again, like we were just doing our research. We were figuring out what was going on. I was still focused on the corporate job. And then, so I was working in cannabis and I got let go of that. I mean,
during that crazy time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that then really like put me on my heels and I had the opportunity to kind of focus on this. And mm-hmm. so it was a forced hand situation where I was like, okay, well now that is gone. I don't have that to sustain me or like to keep myself occupied. Like how much of my energy and time and effort can I pour into this now? So it was scary, but I'll also say like we were so naive going into this process. And like, I think the vulnerability around sharing our experience has like come from somewhat being naive in that like we did not know and we still don't know what we don't know. Like I
right,
think that
right.
one of the biggest things I've figured out in this journey is that most people don't know and
yes.
most people don't know what we're doing. And I think everyone's just starting life for the first time and we're all just trying to figure it out. And that for me, I think was like the biggest piece of jumping in was just, we did not know what we didn't know. So we did not know how hard it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not know like the struggles that were coming or the obstacles that were coming our way.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, I'm grateful for that because I'm not 100% sure what I would have made that decision back then.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What would my decision have been if I knew the journey?
Knowing what you know today.
Yes. But looking back, I would never change that decision.
Right.
So, yeah, it's kind of a weird one.
I feel like that is such a through line with so many entrepreneurs is like if they had known what they know going into their business mm-hmm. on day one, mm-hmm. a lot of them that we've spoken to would be like, I don't know if I would have, or yeah. I probably wouldn't have, yeah. knowing how hard it is.
Yeah.
And you kind of just have to have the sense of blind optimism
yes.
as an entrepreneur, because you have to believe that things are going to go right. Yes. You have to believe that, you know, things are going to happen and that yeah. you'll be able to figure stuff yeah. out, because otherwise, what is entrepreneurship if not problem solving on a daily basis?
Absolutely.
Putting out fires.
Yeah, absolutely. Basis. But that's it. Like I think the creativity of an entrepreneur comes in how they solve problems. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I've always been a naturally inquisitive person. Like, I ask 3,000 questions. I mm-hmm. need to understand everything. Even when we were starting this, you, like, pull apart all of the layers and you're like, well, okay, so how does the liquid get in the can? As dumb as that sounds,
yeah.
it's a real question that yeah. I didn't know how to answer.
Right.
And so you start pulling pieces and you get inquisitive, and then you start problem solving, and then you just start problem solving with the knowledge that you have. And I think one of the key parts that I love about, like, Toronto and Canada and the entrepreneurial community here is everyone is so willing to help.
Yeah.
And there's so many, like, different message boards and WhatsApp groups and Slack groups and whatever it might be, where it's just a free flow of questions where people are, even if it's like a same category product, people are jumping in to help. And I think I think it's a really beautiful thing that there is, like, such an embedded community within the entrepreneurial space that is willing to go kind of above and beyond to help each other rise all together.
Yeah. I was talking about this with Rachel at Monday Girl.
Yeah.
And a lot of other founders, in that, you know, if your category is nurtured and cultivated
yes.
and it's a healthy ecosystem you live
yes.
in, and I think we have the same perspective within the media industry too.
Yeah.
The more, you know, competitors or people in the same space that you have, the healthier the ecosystem
yeah.
and the more visibility, and everyone
Absolutely.
Is able to benefit from it. So I think it serves everyone to be able to knowledge share and
yeah.
just continue to build, especially for new categories
yeah.
too, because that awareness building and the educational messaging is on the shoulders of every entrepreneur that's trying to raise
yes.
awareness with customers and partners and things
yeah.
like that. So the more that work is shared out and divvied out across the board,
yeah,
it's like a higher tides lift all boats kind of
absolutely. And I mean, like, let's be real, especially in beverage, there's bigger competitors out yeah. there that are coming for us than
yeah.
like your neighbor down the street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I just think that, like, why wouldn't we? Like, why not? And I think
exactly.
that if you truly believe in the, like, competitive moat that you've built around your product and your brand,
mm-hmm.
Like, I truly believe if we put my product in someone else's product and a retailer chooses the other person's product, then it wasn't the right fit. Or I didn't tell the story right. Or I didn't approach the sales conversation in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't think that person not sitting at that table with me and being able to put their product beside mine and they're going head to head
yeah.
is the right way to go about business. Like,
yeah.
I just
it's
think
not taking away from
no,
yeah.
like, it's like we're all playing together. You might win today, I might win tomorrow. And it's just like it's all an entire ecosystem of
yeah.
pushing things forward.
And that positive.
Hopefully. Yeah.
What advice would you give? You know, now having a few years under your belt
mm-hmm.
as an entrepreneur, what advice would you give to other entrepreneurs who are looking to not only start a business, but just want to build something different and
yes.
also build out a category, you know, disruptor,
mm-hmm.
so to speak? What would you say to that person if they're like, let's go for a coffee, I want to
yeah.
pick your brain?
Yeah. it's such an interesting question. And I mean, obviously, like, it's asked a lot. And I think my immediate gut reaction, transparently and honestly, is like, why are you asking me? Like, I'm not, I feel like I've just taken ownership over my identity as an entrepreneur
mm-hmm.
and as a CEO and all those things. So it's always a funny question that I feel like I'm receiving, a little imposter syndrome
mm-hmm.
in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that my biggest learning in Barbette is that, like, something, the product, the idea, the concept, whatever it is never going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever. Like, it will never be perfect. So waiting for perfection potentially will thieve you up of the opportunity to launch something.
Yes.
So get it to a point where you feel comfortable and then, like, let it out into the world and see what happens.
Yeah.
And, like, we still are always constantly getting feedback from our community. We're constantly, like, checking in with them. Does this taste right? Like, you move co-manufacturers. Like, there is, like, water quality components to think about, and like their slight taste varietals. So like, how do we make sure that we're constantly like delivering the right product, right?
Yeah.
And so even with like our new flavor deep dive that we launched in January, like that was enough, that was a year to 14, 16 months of going back and forth with our community to double check that what we were putting out there was in line with expectations. Now, that all being said, I think there's also the founder and the entrepreneur who has like a tolerance for risk and a strong conviction on what they want to put into the world. And sometimes people will say that something is a bad idea. And if you strongly believe in what you're doing, you just kind of sometimes have to do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like maybe ignore the naysayers and then also don't wait for perfect.
Yeah. Progress over perfection.
Exactly.
Always. Yeah. And just iterate. And yeah. Also like what is the right moment or perfection even look like? Because it could be different for everyone. You're never
going
to be able to make everyone happy.
No.
So might as well do something that's right for you as a brand and that hopefully resonates with your audience.
Yeah.
But nothing, imperfect is overrated.
It totally. Like in your day-to-day, it's so overrated,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's not interesting.
Kind of boring.
Yeah. You mentioned something that I thought was interesting. At what point do you think you fully embrace and accepted your identity as an entrepreneur and a business owner? Because you mentioned like a little bit of imposter syndrome, but also like, was there any ever a hesitation to fully accept that title and that role?
I think entrepreneurship is like a consistent and constant get out of your comfort zone. And like even today recording a podcast, I'm like, that's not something you do every day. Like it's within your comfort zone or it's not. And so there's so many like thresholds where like you're out of your window of tolerance. And I think that taking ownership over that word or like my being an entrepreneur probably was only recently, to be honest. Like I think that in the first few years, again, like we didn't, when we sat down, like we didn't sit down and say, okay, like we did all this research and here's the white space in the industry and here's what we're going to go after. Like it was so driven by Katie's experience that we just, again, like we were one step in front of each other and then we launched and then it was just continuing to put one step in front of each other, one step in front of the other. And so I think that only like recently as I've kind of like professionalized the business in a way and we've brought on more people and like we have an employee, like I think that is when I've been like, okay, this feels a little bit more like I'm stepping into that role.
Yeah. And it's got some legs.
Yeah.
Some traction.
It's got some meat into it. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, and I'm an entrepreneur of a beverage business, you know? Like, it's just, I don't know. It took me a while to get there, but I got there.
For sure. For sure. You know, you built your brand from just bootstrapping, building from the ground up.
Yeah.
One step at a time. Also, in a very highly competitive space. We all know that that category is filled with lots of players, big and small.
Yep.
What forms of support have been the most helpful and game-changing for you? Traditional or untraditional, like what would be something that you would recommend most people go after from a support standpoint? And then what's something that people may not have even considered as well?
I mean, I think the obvious answer is money. The government has some incredible grants. There's amazing programs like the MasterCard Pier 5 grant. There's other things out there that you can go after. There's tax credits. There's a bunch of that. So that's, I think, the more obvious answer. I think the answer that I was the most surprised at, or my experience that I was most surprised at, is the emotional and family support that is required. Like, it is such a roller coaster. In an hour, you can have, like, a high high and a low low.
It's just so true.
Like, you can be like, I'm on top of the world, and then you get a phone call, and you're like, and I have no idea what I'm doing again. So I think that, like, having that support, like, I can't tell you how many friends who have come out, and, like, I've called them being like, I have a brand ambassador who is called in sick. Like, I need someone to come help me. Can you come help me? My sisters will show up, like, outside, obviously, Katie, but, like, my other sisters and lots of siblings on my family will show up. And, again, like, friends and, like, my boyfriend. Like, it's just, like, the amount of, like, emotional turmoil sometimes it can take. And I don't mean to say that because to be pessimistic. It's just the reality.
Yeah.
And you need someone to support you through those roller coasters. And I think that was like the key. And someone said it really early on to me, like, make sure your support network and your safety net is in place because like you're gonna need it. Mm. And it really rang true. It really rang true.
Yeah, having some real ones by you.
Yeah.
Ready to call in the reinforcements. Yeah.
Like even like you get a text message from a friend, like I'm sure with Glory too, like you see it in a random space and someone sends you a message and you're like, oh my God, this is here. And like, mm-hmm. it's just like that knowing that there is that support behind you that is like very invisible at certain points of the journey, but is there, is just like really important.
Yeah. And as like little reminders of why and what you're doing and that you're on the right track and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those things go a long way.
They do.
Yeah. And
they
it's hard to quantify those things too.
It is.
Right?
No, absolutely. And like, it's very hard to quantify, but I think if I didn't have that support or that safety net or those like ears to talk to that had no idea what I was doing, but maybe just like listen to me.
Yes.
I don't know like how far you'd push yourself, right? So I think that just that support network.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we're working with MasterCard to talk to small business owners mm-hmm. about their experiences. They believe in, you know, obviously empowering small businesses. You've experienced that yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the role that things like having the right network, support system, funding, and then also just like collaborative partners can play
yeah.
in the overall experience as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
How important, I mean, we've kind of already talked about this, but how important is that ecosystem of support, especially for women-led brands? How has your experience, if anything, really kind of underscored the importance of, you know, being a woman founder, but also
yep.
finding support in other women founders in the community too?
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, maybe we don't all know, but women led businesses are traditionally underfunded and mm-hmm. under-resourced.
Mm-hmm.
So programs like the ones that MasterCard create and provide are integral just because the capital is not as abundant for female-led businesses.
Yeah.
I'm sure Rachel went through some stats with you when she was here, but I won't regurgitate them. But it's traditionally underfunded. And
mm-hmm.
so I think that the capital is obviously one piece and that's like integral to building something, but the community part and the resources to understand what you're building and the help to build it, I think are even more important. Like coming from someone who wasn't necessarily setting out to be an entrepreneur, but like kind of has become one, I didn't know what I don't know, and I still don't know what I don't know. And so
mm-hmm.
like business planning and like putting together your cash flow and putting together like your P&L and like how do you look at bookkeeping, like the unsexy
yes.
pieces of a business that are what makes a business succeed. Like that's where you're going to succeed or fail, is in those unsexy things. And not knowing those, but getting resources from places like MasterCard is really integral to like the success of a business.
Yeah, absolutely. And from your experience, what do you think people still get wrong about, one, the overall discourse about small businesses
mm-hmm.
in general and the impact that small businesses can have? I mean, small businesses make up 98-99% of the economy,
yeah.
the majority of the economy.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the impact that a small business or brands like Barbette can have on pushing cultural conversations forward.
Yeah. I think for small businesses, what people get the most wrong is they underestimate the ripple effect that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So from like an economic standpoint, when you pick up or purchase a can of Barbette, like you're not just supporting like myself and my team. There is a plethora of vendors that come behind that. There are graphic designers. There are the printers who are printing our can and our packaging. There is our co-manufacturer. There are ingredient suppliers. They are the truck drivers. They're the merchandisers, the grocers, the mom and pop shops, the restaurants. Like there's an entire supply chain that you are supporting when you pick up or purchase and vote with your wallet for a small business. And I think that like small businesses create real jobs.
Yeah.
And I think that is underestimated when it comes to the impact that we have. I think on the cultural side, I think cultural shifts happen with small businesses. We're leaner, we're quicker to react. Yeah. Like, we are creating the cultural shifts that happen on the ground floor.
Yeah. And like, from the ground up, grassroots, yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah. For us, Barbette isn't just a beverage. Like, it's a point of view, and it's it's how we look at the world and how we want, obviously, the world to be looked at in return. And so, like, we're creating dialogue around hosting and the importance of inclusion, whether that be from, like, a drinking perspective or just a general perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, our motto is there's always another seat at the table. And so we are able to enact that from the grassroots in a way that big brands just can't. Like, we don't have the politics. We don't have the layers of bureaucracy.
Yes.
We don't have any of that. And so we're able to make these quick decisions. We're able to talk directly to our community.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then actually, like, take those insights into action very quickly.
I love also the community that you have built, because I see, like, I get the Gazette.
No, thank you.
Today, yesterday, I think.
Yeah, this morning.
This morning, yes. And then you have all your great events. And you can tell that the people at the event feel connected through something that is bigger than a can on the table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a bigger picture and a bigger point of view. What do you love about your community?
Oh, my gosh, everything. I'll tell one maybe quick story, because I think that, like, this to me was like when I was like, oh, we're doing something here.
Yes.
So we were probably 6 or 7 months into launching, and I was at Paris on Ossington, and it was the first time I'd seen Barbette on that menu. And so I was all giddy, and I was taking photos of it like everyone does. And speaking of, like, owning the experience, I was, like, too shy to almost say to our server that I was the co-founder.
Right.
So I kind of hit it, and then I'm, like, meanwhile taking photos of the menu. And so eventually it obviously came out, and then I said, I'd love to buy, like, whoever's on shift a round of Barbette. And so I did that, and then one of the servers, one of the other servers from another table came up and actually told this story, which, like, completely touched me, which was that she had just decided to quit drinking alcohol for no other reason than she just, that was her decision, and she had just not felt comfortable going to an event or to a party, and she had discovered Barbette, and it made her have this, like, level of comfortability going to a party and holding it in her hand and not feeling like she was, like, an outsider looking in. And it was this, like, beautiful replication of what Katie's experience was, but in someone else. And so, like, at that moment, I was like, okay, what we're doing, yes, it's a beverage, but what we're doing matters. And I think that, to me, that was, like, a huge, huge moment. And we carried that, into all of our events. And so we, like, built the community. We did all these amazing events, as we've kind of chatted about. And they were all to introduce experiences to people where, like, alcohol was not the centerfold, and that you could meet people. And what I found, again, really cool is that people kind of trusted us and Barbette to have these new experiences. So I remember doing events at, like, Othership, for example.
Yeah.
People were maybe a little bit shy to go into that experience because it was a bit intimidating for them, but they were able to because they had the community of Barbette with them, and then they entered it.
Yeah.
And so, like, those moments have been really cool to grasp, and then again to, like, take and hold and harness the power of it and try and, like, optimize it and kind of get it out there.
It's crazy to think that, like, something, or maybe it's not so crazy to think, but, like, something like the beverage you're holding can really be, like, an emotional and mental gateway to joy and opportunity and connection with people that you otherwise may not feel comfortable in, like, a social setting. And it just kind of makes you think about how much those things can play a role in the way that we engage with each other. And also, like, how much those roles can also be a barrier for people to interact. If they're, you know, if you are, like, a sober person, there's alcohol. Or, like, all these different things that play a role, right?
Yeah.
And
I mean, we've all been at a party not holding something. And
I know.
It's so awkward. What do you do with your hands?
The other thing, too, is that, like, sometimes you just, you're so used to just the ritual of having something and just, you don't even necessarily, like, for me, I go back and forth between a drink and, like, a non-alcoholic drink and a non-alcoholic drink. But for me, half the time, I'm like, I don't even need this glass of wine or beer. I just want something to hold my hand as I'm walking. It's like habit too, right?
Totally.
And so having something for people to use as a tool, I think, is just really such a great thing to see, and making people feel welcome and included, and just and just comfortable.
Yes. You know? All about comfort.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want your friend to feel on the outside.
Yes.
You want everyone to feel comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Has your community ever challenged, like you mentioned that you take feedback from your community, obviously, but has your community ever challenged you to, in a way that has made your business better, or made you rethink about how you show up as a company as well?
Yes, all the time. I personally love that people are opinionated or have something to say, or like if you've taken the time to sit down and send me or like us an email with your feedback or your perspective, good, mediocre, or constructive.
Yes.
I actually don't necessarily care what the words are. I care that you took the time to write into me because that means you care.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is like the biggest kind of success metric.
Mm-hmm.
We, maybe in an example, so like we work with a 3PL to do our direct-to-consumer order, so all of our orders online, and they, unbeknownst to us, had introduced like a new packaging scope, and one of our customers emailed and was like, there's far too much packaging or too much paper in this box that I got.
Right.
And we obviously immediately were like, well, that's not how it's supposed to be delivered. Send us a photo. And then we were able to fix it. So I think that like your community is so integral because you cannot be everywhere. Like you absolutely cannot. Like, yes, you know what's supposed to happen, but like there's human error. We all do it.
Yeah.
And the community feedback into us to then be able to fix the problem. And I think when your community gives you the opportunity to fix something or to make something better or make something right, I think that is like the most important feedback dialogue.
Mm-hmm. As well, coming from a corporate background where the emphasis, I guess, is really not on the individual. It's really on like the entity, the corporate entity.
Mm-hmm.
And then going in down the entrepreneurial path, how has opening up about and being so personal and transparent about your journey, like how has that made you feel? How have you navigated that landscape? Was it hard for you to kind of do that? Or are you naturally like someone that just likes to share all these things?
I think my friends would probably say that I naturally don't share.
Okay.
Unless you get me in the right mood.
Yes.
I'm like a two-question person. Like if you say, how are you? I'm like, good. And then if you ask me a second question, I will reveal it.
Right.
The content creation side of this business is like very new to me. And it's something that I think a lot of entrepreneurs and founders struggle with. Like just, I did not know starting a business would mean that I became a content creator in a sense, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think like, the idea of building out loud and like revealing all these things, like that definitely did not come naturally to me.
And also just being your own media company.
Yes.
Too, right?
Yes. Like who has time to make 3 TikToks a day and run a business and post on LinkedIn and post on Instagram and then respond to people?
Yeah.
So I think that the vulnerability only came when I shared, I think, something initially on LinkedIn, and then the raw reaction to it, I was like, oh, okay, people care, people want to read this, and that made me want to share a little bit more, but I still very much struggle. I still struggle with, like, doing everything and also finding the time to post and to share the story. Like, you get so caught up in like your little bubble, sometimes it is easy to just like streamline through. And this isn't even about the like necessarily all the good things, it's about the bad things, it's about like your struggles. And like, I obviously would be more than happy to help other small business owners, but I just like, you sometimes just get caught up in what's in front of you.
Yeah. Have you found that as a result of being transparent along that process that you've kind of taken any kind of inadvertent roles as like a mentor to other kind of people that are coming up, or found mentors for yourself?
Bit of both. Like, I mean, again, I think going back to our earlier conversation, the word mentor or like that still feels like I shouldn't be wearing that hat. Like I'm still so early, but I actually, I don't remember who said it, but I was at a conference and someone said the best mentor. So I think sometimes we think of mentors as 10 steps ahead or 20 or 30 or been there and done that. And someone said, I think it was Arlene Dickinson, she said that your best mentor is probably the person sitting beside you. And that is because they're in the trenches, they're doing what you're doing right now, and they have like real insights into the survival of the business in that moment. Mm-hmm. Mentorship from a high level is obviously great when you're like charting the path forward and building out what you want to do. But I think in the immediate, like your mentor beside you is the most impactful.
And because they're living,
yeah,
living it.
Exactly. Well. Exactly. Yeah.
What kind of, I also, what I love about the brand is just the branding, the creativity, the vibe of it.
Yeah.
What keeps you creatively inspired? And also, like, as you're creating new different types of products and, mm-hmm. and testing things, like,
yeah,
and how that translates visually, like, what are you drawing inspiration from that standpoint?
I mean, I think it's a whole whack of things all at once. Like, I think it's the day-to-day life. I think that, like, going on a walk with my dog in the morning, as like bland as that sounds, like, I think it's not doing things on work. It's not working in the business that I get creativity. Mm-hmm. It's like mm-hmm. being able to pull out and pull away and then like reflect and look at things. And then I think it's talking to other creatives. Like, Barbette has always been a brand that is looked at and worked with the creative community. Like, we support with in-kind product. We generally have like, even the packaging design was created like from like that creative eye with the tension in the colors. And mm-hmm. so we naturally find ourselves in creative spaces. And so I think just absorbing the incredible work that other people are doing as well. And like, I think Toronto and Canada, like, we have so many incredible brands and big and small and creatives that exist and live here. And so just looking at their channels, picking up the phone and having a quick chat. Like, I think, again, back to community, I've been able to foster a lot of people that I'm able to just pick the phone up and have a conversation with. But I think, like, where I draw inspiration is a lot in the mundane. So it's like, again, walking the dog and just thinking mm-hmm. and pulling mm-hmm. yourself out of the business.
Mm. And, yeah, I guess that is so important just as a business owner to be yeah. able to not have your head in the sand, so to speak, all the time. Yeah. Be able to just, like, take a breather yeah. and step back and just be like, okay, like, what's actually like around me?
Yeah.
And what does the lay of the land look like?
Yeah.
And how do I take the blinders off sometime mm-hmm. in order mm-hmm. to have some context about the yeah. world around?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Now, it's very hard some days because you're like, okay, I did operations this morning and I did inventory planning then and I did sales then. And then yeah. you're like, okay, now let's go into a brainstorm.
Yeah. You're like, my brain is tapped
yeah.
out.
Yeah. Or I'm like functional, right? You're yeah. like, what does that cost? What does that do? Like, you can't go blue sky sometimes.
Yes.
So
yes,
it's definitely like a skill and a muscle you kind of have to keep using.
Mm-hmm. Just as we round out here, what excites you the most about the next 5 years, the next 10 years for mm-hmm. Barbette?
Oh my gosh, so many things. I think that the most exciting thing is that we're just getting started. So like, we've got 3 and a bit years under our belt now. We've kind of proven that there's a market for this. We've proven that there's a community for this. And now it's about, how do we accelerate everything? Like, mm-hmm. how do we bring this across the country? How do we get this into more hands? Like, we're in over 600 different locations at this point across yeah, Canada.
I see it everywhere.
Thank
it's so
you.
Great to see. Yeah.
Thank you. Doing our job, that means.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, like, how do you get this into more hands? And then I think, again, like, how do we keep building that community and creating these experiences and places for people to feel comfortable?
Mm-hmm. I love that. And at the end of the day, what would you say kind of drives, if you could kind of go back to day one
yeah.
and like the thesis around building the business, how would you say that mission and that purpose continues today, and in what ways do you think mm-hmm. that has also evolved mm-hmm. since day one?
I think it has always been less about like the beverage as the center point and more about like, what is that point of connection mm-hmm. and Barbette is what that happens around. Mm. And so we continue to kind of create moments that is indicative of. I think the inclusivity of it all. I think maybe what is like slightly shifted is just moving from, or doing our best to move from like a local brand perspective to a national brand mm-hmm. and the motion that happens. And I think the difficult steps will come in maintaining like our grassroots, our community focus in going national, but like, we are very dedicated to be doing, or we're dedicated to do that, because I think that is what's been able to set us apart. So it's sticking to your roots, not going like big corporate, obviously, and really like fostering those experiences where people feel connected.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Thank you so much for the chat today.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think about like when you first, I literally remember when you first launched and like just to see how you've grown, and I'm seeing it literally on every menu and I'm like, I'm not going to bother her by sending a photo of every time I see it at the grocery store down the street and everything. So
yeah.
Like, actually, I think I may have sent you a photo of like Summer Hill, just up the street.
Yep.
There was a big display, and I was like, and I had to, but I won't harass you with a million photos.
I love it. It's
just so cool to see.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks so much.
Happy to see how the business has grown and how people have really felt connected and how much it's resonated with
people. Mm-hmm. So. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the opportunity to tell our story.
It's our pleasure. Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you.
Whether you're building something on your own, supporting someone who is, or dreaming of taking that first step, we hope you're walking away feeling inspired, energized, and connected. We invite you to take the next step by joining the MasterCard Small Business Community, which provides small business owners the opportunity to learn, grow, and connect with MasterCard and its partners, plus gain access to events and resources to help manage and expand your business. You can sign up at mastercard.ca/smallbusiness and become part of a network that's as ambitious and purpose-driven as you are.